cloudy day with outbreaks of rain and some snow early on. Temperatures here 8 or 9 in the west, 3 or 4 in the east. More rain to come across western Scotland on Sunday. Elsewhere, generally it will be another dry but cloudy day, but milder with highs of 9 to 11 Celsius. That's the forecast.
Thanks, Alex. Have a good night. And we conclude our Book of the Week now. Penelope Fitzgerald, A Life by Hermione Lee. Having won the Booker Prize at the age of 62 for her novel Offshore, Fitzgerald is now a figure of note in the literary world. Following publication of At Freddy's and Innocence, the beginning of spring, her seventh novel received glowing reviews and a Booker nomination. The reader is Penelope Wilton.
In the summer of 1988, just before The Beginning of Spring was published, Penelope moved to live with her daughter Maria and her son-in-law, John Lake. She was 72 and was beginning to have problems with her health. At the side of their house in Highgate was a former coach house where Penelope lived for the rest of her life. It suited her very well. She had her books on the old wooden bookshelves, a sofa and a bed, her little wooden writing table by the garden window. She got up very early to write, going into town on some days to work in the British Library or attend meetings or see friends. And at weekends, she would, in Maria's phrase, potter through to the main house, usually for tea and a chat. She cooked for herself. She was part of the family, keenly interested in and involved with their doings. Maria often went with her to literary events or to the theatre or the ballet. John paid all the household bills, and there was, of course, no rent. She became a familiar figure in the neighbourhood on the Archway Road, in a red anorak, shopping for herself in the butchers and the greengrocers, stopping to talk to people she knew. She joined the Highgate Literary and Scientific Institute, a venerable cultural organisation full of energetic book lovers. She became a regular at her local church, All Saints, and always went to the early Sunday morning service. Thomas Lake, who was 4 when his grandmother moved in, remembered the smell of her breakfast fry-ups from her kitchen after she got back from church. Thomas and Sophie Lake were growing up under her eyes, and she went to all their school events and kept an observant eye on them. Her last grandchild, Maria's second son, Alfie, was born in August 1992, which meant, as she habitually and proudly said in her letters, she had 9. Every Sunday at 11 o'clock, Penelope would ring her daughter Tina for a long talk, while Terence was at church with the children. When she went to stay with them, she would set to in their garden straight away, yanking out weeds, pruning and planting. From 1990 onwards, she took them all on a 2-week holiday every year. It was her main annual expenditure. They would rent a large holiday house with a pool and hire 2 cars. In this style, over 9 years, they visited France, Spain, Italy, and Menorca. On these holidays, she got to know her Dooley grandchildren well. When it was fine, they went on expeditions or sat by the pool or went to the beach. Forward the shrimping party, she would say. When it rained, they played games and read. The children remembered her cheating. Playing picture lotto with Luke, aged 3, she would change the cards when he wasn't looking, and having long, absorbed conversations. Luke was aware from early on that she was interested in words and his use of them. She sent them all little drawings and letters and poems. She did not cuddle them, but she might call them dearie. If one of them was walking along with her and was upset, she would take their hand in hers and tap joined hands gently against their side. Luke recognised in her a preference for order, manners and social grace. As an adult, he called it spirituality. Even at times when energy and confidence dropped, Penelope worked hard. "Get on with it," read one entry in her appointments diary for 1988. She poured out essays, introductions and reviews. Reviewers of The Gate of Angels, her 8th novel, in long, enthusiastic pieces, sought for the perfect phrase to describe a Fitzgerald novel. John Bailey spoke of her mesmeric insouciance. The novel was shortlisted for the Irish Times Aer Lingus Prize. "I don't see how it can do much against J. Updike," she said to Stuart Prophet, and for the Booker. As in other years, when another novel won the prize, this time A.S. Byatt's Possession, she was self-contained and dignified in defeat. All the same, in her humorous, rueful way, she did not like to be defeated, and was to be heard, on at least one occasion, making sharp remarks about the judges. There was much publicity for The Gate of Angels. Asked by one newspaper what she was currently reading, she replied, "I have Teach Yourself Chinese Martial Arts by the bed, because my grandson Luke, who is nearly six, says it will do me good." In 1992, she began to keep a regular, if idiosyncratic, account of her earnings in a notebook called My Takings. Every so often, sums were annotated. "I've no idea what this is for," or, "Oh dear, where is the Observer check? I've lost it." Prize judging added to her savings and also interested her. She judged the Booker Prize twice, in 1991 and in 1998. In 1991, Jonathan Keats, writer and teacher, was entranced by Penelope from the moment she arrived, with her bags and hats and air of complete authenticity. He liked her ruthless candour. "Goodness, why bother," she would say of a book, or "pointless portentousness." A very different account of her as a fellow judge a few years later was given by the academic Valentine Cunningham, who found her irritable, perverse and ungenerous. She snapped at him in one meeting for his habit of calling writers' work their stuff. "They're not stuff," which stung him. She went on her own to Sydney and Tasmania to speak at the Hobart Literary Festival in November 1991. Once there, she enjoyed it, took careful note of everything around her, and gave a generous interview to a Tasmanian literary magazine, Island. But it was a very long way, and for all her energy and stamina, she tired more easily now. She did take another journey, though, the following April. This was a trip to the Holy Land. She went with a Methodist group called Interchurch Travel. Her main ambitions were to see the flowers and to be rebaptized in the Jordan. She had the sense of confusion, dismay and stress that all travellers in search of tranquility in the Holy Land find themselves experiencing. You have to remind yourself that you know that there is scarcely any proof that anything's what it's traditionally said to be. Still, on Palm Sunday, on the shore of the clear waters of the Galilee, taking outdoor communion at St. Peter's Chapel, she did find something resembling tranquility, and took a perfectly flat, smooth, pale red pebble home to remind herself of it. All this activity kept pace with the writing of her next novel, The Blue Flower. It took her 4 years to write. One of the reasons she made slow progress was her health. In the early 1990s, she developed arrhythmia and high blood pressure. She also had increasingly bad arthritis in her back, her shoulders and her hands, and she was often in pain. She was short of breath and found going uphill and long walks hard. Although her body was starting to weaken, she was in powerful control of her life and her mind. When her brother Raul died on the 5th of June 1994, it was a momentous loss. To her dear old friend, Willie Condo, she wrote, "I'm the last of my family." Penelope sent Stuart Prophet The Blue Flower in August 1994, when she got back from her family holiday in Spain. It took him nearly 2 months to respond, which annoyed her. But the letter was ecstatic. "I hardly know what to say about it," he wrote, "except that sometime after midnight last night, I finished it with tears all over my cheeks. It was so wonderfully funny and wise and understanding, as always." Booker judges in 1995 ignored The Blue Flower, but at the end of the year, 25 critics chose it as their book of the year. In America, the novel caught fire. It became the book everyone wanted to read. In March 1999, at the Penn International Writers' Day, she was given the Golden Pen Award for my alleged services to literature. Meanwhile, she got on with it, judging prizes, going to pen meetings, reviewing books, doing interviews, travelling to conferences and festivals, speaking on the radio, writing letters. Stuart Prophet started a new job at Penguin in the summer of 1999. To Willie Condor, she lamented, "What a nuisance, I don't like these upsets. I like everything to go on just the same, from day to day. My cup of tea at 7:30, my little walk to the shop to get the Evening Standard. It's dreadful, really. But Willie, we're survivors." Stuart Prophet took her out to lunch to ask her if she would go with him. She replied, "Of course I will, but I haven't written a book." She could not find an idea for a new book. Since the millennium was approaching, it would coincide with her 83rd birthday. She kept being asked for her favourite books. Her answers would vary depending on her mood. For the books that have made the greatest impression on me, she offered the New Testament and Turgenev's Fathers and Sons. "I feel close to weeping when I get to the end, and the old Bazarovs, resigned to their loss, are left side by side, their heads dropping like those of two sheep at midday." Interviewers regularly arrived fully intending to get to her secrets beneath. All retired baffled. Sometimes she would fend them off with a poker-faced joke. Tired of being asked how she researched the blue flower, she told an interviewer brightly, "I found it all on the internet." In her later years, she repeatedly spoke of failure as a theme both of her work and her life. Above all, she spoke of her regret at not having been more explicit in her novels about her religious beliefs. She never looked back on her own work with pleasure. One always feels one ought to have done things differently. As a grandmother, she sometimes wished wistfully that she'd been the smart, rich kind. A letter to Tina said sadly, "Don't thank me, as I have failed to produce the fur coat, the little freehold property in good condition, all the things I dreamed of." A touching relic of her relationship with her grandchildren is a birthday poem, which she wrote in 1999 to her 11-year-old granddaughter Sophie Lake, inside a card on which she had gummed a flower and drawn a picture of a vase. This is a bunch of Edelweiss, which must have lived with snow and ice. "The Edelweiss grows very high, but you can get there if you try. I know you will, I know you can, with love and confidence from Gran." She was imagining her grandchildren into their future lives with a squeeze of the hand. When she died in hospital in April 2000, following a series of strokes, the young woman doctor who came into her room to certify her death looked at the name above her bed and said, "Penelope Fitzgerald. I love her books." Those who did not like Penelope Fitzgerald found her reserved, perverse, stubborn, mischievous, willful and sharp-tongued. Those who did like her found her kind, wise, stoical, funny, reticent, brilliant, and generous.
Penelope Wilton was reading Penelope Fitzgerald, A Life by Hermione Lee. It was abridged by Libby Spurrier, produced by Joanna Green, and was a peer production for BBC Radio 4. BBC Radio 4. Now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015, today, Saturday the 7th of December. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, Forties, Dogger, Fisher, German Bight, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800, new low expected South East Iceland 990 by 1800 Friday. High France 1033, slow moving with little change. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, northeast 40s. Northwesterly 6 to gale 8, becoming variable 4, then southeasterly 6 to gale 8 later. Rain or snow, good becoming moderate or poor. Southwest 40.